Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce David Morgan, a widely recognized analyst in the precious metals industry, and he consults for hedge funds, high net worth investors, mining companies, and more. He's the publisher of the Morgan Report, which is a world-class publication designed to build and secure wealth. And with that said, to our live viewers, if you have any questions, please feel free to type them in the chat box, and David will get to them at the end of his presentation. And with that said, David, I will be right here if you need anything, and the floor is all yours.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the introduction. And as always, thank you to the Money Show allowing me to be on the Virtual Expo. And I'm going to start off and let everyone know right up front. I want to give you the audience, the opportunity to ask me questions on any topic, but basically around this banking crisis. So I asked the Money Show coordinator, one of them that I've known for years and wonderful people there, that if I could move my talk from the generating 50% per year with your gold stocks and talk primarily about the banking crisis, and then above and beyond that, have you, the audience, ask me questions about the banking situation. If you have personal concerns, fears, then you can voice them in the chat box. We'll talk about them. So to do both at one time is not going to be that difficult. I actually did this on a panel at the Money Show. I think it was in Florida within the last year and a half, and it was pretty much a gold panel. And I explained what a lot of you know, the sophisticated investors know, that the best way to make money on a gold stock or any stock is to be the gold, to be the option writer. So a little bit about the options market. Most people lose money on options. A lot of these option traders or systems or ideas that you can buy or do on your own involve buying calls, which, as all of you probably know, a call option gives you the right to buy stock or even a commodity at a certain price for a certain amount of time. So not only do you have to be right, but you have to be right in a hurry. And so there's what's called the time decay. And this is basic stuff. And so if you believe Tesla stock's going up and you buy strike price very near what it's trading at and it's a month away, then that stock's got to move to what's in the money and make you a profit. And you've got 30 days to do it. That's an extreme example, but many people attempt that. The people that make the money in options are the people that sell the options. Those are called writing options. They're also called covered calls. So in the gold business, your best ideas come from, or the most sound investments come from royalty companies, royalty and streaming companies. These are companies that I have featured in the Morgan Report from day one. And these are steady eddies. Yes, they're volatile. Yes, they go up and down. And because of the volatility of gold in general and where it stands as a group under the different groups of the stock market, like if you look at IBD, you can have consumables, you could have metals, you could have precious metals, you can have biotech, you can have automotive, all that stuff. The gold sector primarily has like the highest beta. It reacts the most up and down. Because of that, you get a higher premium. So the idea is very simple. You own blocks of 100 shares of Franco-Nevada, silver, wheat, or wheat and precious metals, rather, Hecla Mining, Pan American Silver, any of these top-tier companies in the precious metals arena, gold, silver companies, or others, but primarily I'm talking gold stocks. You will be able to own the stock in your portfolio and use that as the ability to write what's called a covered call. So you own, real just basic example, 100 shares of Franco-Nevada, and you write a call on, excuse me, yeah, write a call or sell the call, same thing. You write the call. So you do it, let's say, one strike price out. And if you don't know what that is, you can look up on the internet. So stock's trading, for example, $100. One strike above, it's 110. You sell the call for 110, and you do it for 3 months out. So you might collect at least 15% for that on an annual basis. You might get, I'll say 7%, 6%, something like that for a quarter, probably higher. I mean, I'm being very conservative telling you 15%. And so let's say the worst thing happens. The stock goes to 120 and you get called out. Well, you're in business. You're in the call writing business and you made a profit. Did you make the exact penny profit that you could have if you just owned the stock? The answer is no, but you probably got $7 for the for writing the call. So you would be plus the 110 you wrote it at. So you're at 117 and the stock went to 120 and you got called out. And so what happens? Well, you didn't get the $3 and you had the inventory. So there's no risk involved. And if that happens, what I teach is to just buy your inventory back and do it again. That's rare, but it does happen. So I gave you the worst case. The best case, which happens again and again and again, is you write the call for 110, you collect your $7 premium, and the stock gets to 113. Well, the premium is so big on the call, you still keep your stock and the premium. And that's the idea. So 85% of the time, you're going to win. You're going to collect the premium, keep the stock, collect the premium, keep the stock, collect the premium, keep the stock. So you don't have to do it as a business. I mean, you can think of it as a business, but you can do it with just a few stocks. And going back to, you know, one of my favorites, I talk almost every time on the Money Show, and that's, you know, Bill O'Neill from Investor's Business Daily. And I mean, his portfolio is big in numbers, but not big in the amount of stocks. He's in like six stocks. I mean, maybe more than that, but I'll doubt in his professional career he's ever owned more than 10. And you don't have to own a lot to do well in the stock market. In fact, you can be over-diluted or over-diversified. And that's a strong opinion. You can take it for what it's worth. So that's the basic idea. If you want to learn more about it, I don't have a course. I don't teach it. I do on the premium membership. When I do it, I talk about it. So on the look over my shoulder portion of the Morgan Report, when you're a premium member, I'll tell you I'm writing calls in Franco Nevada, and I actually am kind of vague about it because I'm not a registered investment advisor, but I am allowed to tell you what I'm doing. So I'm going to go out at least 3 months, and I'm going to probably go one strike myself. So I'm not telling you specifically. You got to do it at 110. You got to write it in June. And if you don't get this premium, then don't sell it. I don't do that exact, but I give you a big enough hint. Anybody that's sophisticated enough to be on my service would know pretty much exactly what I'm talking about. There is a gentleman I met years ago at the Money Show, Michael Scalin, and I might have mispronounced that slightly. There's a website, it's called borntosell.com, all one word, borntosell.com. He teaches covered call writing. He's very good at it. I've had referred many members. I don't get an affiliate program or anything. It's just my goodwill to you. So if you really want to learn how to do it and learn how to do it well, I would suggest that you go to Michael Scanlon and sign up for his course and learn how to make a business, essentially. He's a little more aggressive than me, meaning he usually writes the call a month at a time, which means you're busier doing it every month. I'm a little bit, I don't say lazy, but it's not my primary investment. Some people it could be if you made a make that. So taking a bit of time here, so I wanted to not renege on what I told everyone. Again, the 50% is actually conservative. Michael did a study on my top tier, which at the time were six stocks, and he looked at it over the year in a back test study, and the return on it was 40% for the year. Now, that's not going to be every year, but it was for the particular year where I did an interview with him on my mastermind program talking about covered calls. We're just doing my stock picks. What would it yield in a given? So 15, again, is probably a minimum. And that's far higher than anything in the bond market, you know, corporates or government bonds. And it's actually safer because you're the one that owns the inventory. There is no counterparty risk. You already have the, let's say, the warehouse full of stock certificates that you can use as your collateral to be in the call writing business. business. Something that very few people do, the professionals do it quite a bit, because for every call option that's being bought, there's got to be a seller, right? For every buyer, there's a seller. It's a zero-sum game. One side wins, one side loses. The sellers win 85% of the time. The buyers only win 15% of the time. So enough there. I think that's enough. If you have any questions on it, you can ask them now during the presentation, and or send a generic question through the website. It's just support@themorganreport.com. And I will personally, or have one of the staff, answer your question. So moving on to what I wanted to go to and ask permission was the banking crisis. And this is tough because I want to stay in my lane, meaning only the facts, the objective truth, and not get people too concerned. And yet I want to be accurate. I don't want to instill any fear, but the fact is, and anyone that's followed my work for very long knows, I've been predicting a banking crisis for a very long time. And we're here. And there's too many unknown unknowns. And that's not a joke. We have too much out in the system and the interconnectedness of banks to really know that the ability of the big banks like the Federal Reserve to backstop everybody and make them whole and make sure that very few people get hurt is outside the realm of critical thinking. The banks are so interconnected and there's so much exposure through leverage that these banks have that the ability to stop this banking crisis is not as easy as is portrayed by the political class and the bankers themselves. I'm not trying to scare anyone again, but I'm being as real as I can. So let's look at an analogy. And the analogy is going back a few years. And I was one of the first in my field to talk about a food shortage well before it appeared. And I gave the idea that if you bought extra food, it was a no-lose bet. You couldn't lose on that. Because if you bought extra food and I was wrong, and we didn't get increasing food prices, you still had the food to eat. And therefore, you couldn't really lose on it. The only way you could lose on it, I suppose, the food prices went down or you didn't like what you bought, and you didn't want to eat it, so you had to give it the food back. So that aside. And it's not a corny analogy, because what I'm going to say next is something that I've adhered to as a futures trader for a long time. And the adage is, when in doubt, stay out. So if I'm not sure of a trade, or I think this or that, or maybe the technicals haven't lined up all the way, if I have any doubt, I'm going to stay out. Does that mean every trade I make, I win on? Of course not. But at least it gives me pause to make sure when I press that button, go long or short, or write the call, or whatever I'm doing, I really thought it through, and I've mitigated the risk as much as humanly possible. On the banking crisis, that's something to consider. If you pulled your money out of the bank, that's a no-lose situation. You have it. And if things right themselves and you're convinced and the public's convinced and the bankers are convinced and the political class is convinced that everything's back to normal and there's no fear and you could put your deposit back in, you can put it back in. But if the regional banks or some regional banks go down and you have your money and it's above $250,000, you are at risk. You're also at risk at $250,000 or below. And that is because the FDIC doesn't have nearly the amount of money that it would require if there was a full-on banking crisis. They're not even close. It's like 0.3% of the amount of deposits is actually held in reserve by the FDIC. So it's like having less than a dollar. It's like having 3 cents for every dollar. That's what you would get if distributed equally. And it won't be. It's distributed first come, first serve. So the first set of people. Now, that doesn't mean that the banking system wouldn't make good on deposits of $250,000 or less. But in order to do that, the FDIC has to go to Congress and ask for a loan of $100 billion, which is a lot of money to me and you, but for the banking system, it's not that much. If we have a systemic risk, meaning that, oh, I'll just use a number of 10%, 10, 15% of the banks actually fail. So the big push right now is that the smaller regional banks, you're being encouraged through the rhetoric of the mainstream press and the mainstream financial press. If you're in a small bank, it's probably a good idea to move to a large bank, a bank that's too big to fail. And that may not be a bad idea. If you're not going to withdraw some of your money, and I'm not saying really, you know, you should go out and cash out your bank account. I mean, you have to have money in the bank to pay your bills and do your auto pays and cover your credit card or your debit card. I get all that. So certainly I don't want you to overreact. But if you're in a position where you're concerned, I would suggest you mitigate that concern. And one way to do it, of course, is to take some cash out, which is difficult. Another way to do it, and I've advocated for years, as most of you know, and that is to just write a check or do a wire and put it into real money. So you buy physical gold or silver, and yes, there's a premium. So you're going to pay a price, just like buying a stock or any financial asset. There is a markup, but at least you'd be out of the system. And that would be able to be stored either personally or at a facility, and it would just be resting there. Most likely would increase in price, but not necessarily. But it would be much better to lose, let's say, an 8% on the premium if you had to sell it or use it than if your bank account was frozen. Coming back, what slipped my mind a moment ago is when I went in to explain about the FDIC, was a lecture I gave. I've given this lecture, but I actually was interviewed by Stansberry Research, Daniela Cambone, and she talked to me about the bail-ins. Because right now, the bankers are breaking their own law, and I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm not going to take a moral stance on that. But the Frank Dodd bill was very clear that there wouldn't be any more bailouts. It was against the law to bail out. If a bank got in trouble, they bailed in, which means the depositor's money was used to save the bank. And when the depositor's money was used to save the bank, the depositors would get equity in the bank. So if you take Silicon Valley Bank, for example, the depositors were made whole in that case, but if they followed the Frank Dodd situation, they would have taken the deposits to save the bank, and the shareholders of the stock, the owners of the Silicon Valley Bank that hold the stock certificate, would not have been taken out to zero, which is what happened. And those depositors would have gotten shares in the SVB. And it's happened. It happened in Cyprus. It's happened in Europe, a couple of places. I don't have the lecture in front of me, but it's roughly 5 cents on the dollar. So your money basically goes to money heaven. And when you get your equity and you're able to sell it, which is sometimes months down the road, you receive a return of about 5 cents on the dollar. Does that mean that's in stone? That's going to happen every time? No, it doesn't. But what it does mean is that as a depositor, you have exposure. That's all I'm trying to convey. So I don't know. We've got about 10 minutes left. We may have some questions because I'm really more motivated to not scare people, to help alleviate their concerns, because there are things you can do that may help you sleep better at night. You know, is this the end of the world? No. Is this the collapse of the entire financial system? No. But it's not over yet. And everybody gets to make an individual choice. And so that's what I'm here to help you with. So have we got any questions yet into the...
We have a couple of questions. Okay. You may have covered this already, but one of our audience members asked, if a person has money in a bank, where do you move it to if you already have an allocation of PMs?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you're already in precious metals, what do you do with it? I would say you find a money market fund that's T-bills only. You can just do a search on one of the search engines, you know, government T-bill only money market fund. There used to be several. I used to know them by name. I don't anymore. Forgive me. That would be a place. You're out of the system of the banking system and you're working directly with the Treasury. And that means that you're about as safe as you possibly can be. You don't want to be in like a 10-year note or even a 2-year note. You want to be short term. So you definitely want to be in like a 6-month, 3-month T-bill type of situation. And I would stagger it. If you had, you know, let's say a substantive amount, let's call it $100,000, $150,000. If it were me, I'd probably go, you know, 1 month, 3 months. I might go some 6 months. And I just roll them over as my interest accrued and I got my money back in the account and sold the T-bill because I had to because only duration was 1 month. The month is up. What do? I reinvest it back into 1 month T-bill. So I think that's the best information I can give you. And I get it. I mean, a lot of my clients are, come on, David, I've got enough metal. What are you talking about? So that's a consistent answer that you'll get from anyone that's in my field that's a you know, straight shooter on you know where we're at in the system and what's the most conservative move that you can make to have peace of mind. So that was a good question. Thank you. What's the next one? Did I cut you off? Do we have another question?
Yes, I'm sorry. I might shut off accidentally. What if every American had the same Federal Reserve perks as banks do? I'm not sure. Are you familiar with a bill that was proposed in Ohio from Senator Sherrod Brown? He introduced a bill to create Fed accounts. Under this proposal, anyone who opened up the account would receive a debit card, online account access, automatic bill pay, mobile banking, as well as access to ATMs at post offices, much in the same way banks deal directly with the Federal Reserve. Then it talks about this proposal. I guess he's just asking what your thoughts about this would be.
Yeah, well, we've got a sophisticated audience at the Money Show. We always do. I'm not familiar with that exactly, but I will speak to it because it's very much similar to what I do know something about. And that's called the FedNow program. And the FedNow program was soft launched in November of last year. And it's going to be implemented full bore in July of this year, so only a few months away. The Fed now does basically what this person outlined. You have access directly with the Fed. It's all digital. It's 24/7, and it's instantaneous. So there's a lot of benefits to it. As far as the debit card and that kind of thing, I can't speak to it because I don't have knowledge on whether the Fed now program, when it's implemented, will yield a debit card or not. I wouldn't rule it out. You probably do get one, but I'm not sure. But that's, again, what this person wrote is pretty much an outline of what the FedNow program is. Whether Ohio is doing it on a state level and putting some tweaks to it or not, I'm not sure. But I did a lecture on it some time ago in my crypto conspiracy series. And I forget the number. It was a late one. It's like number 27, or Kent Lewis is who you would look for. So if you go to the website, hit the blog tab, hit the blog word, it brings up all of the videos that I've done, and there are several. There's a search engine on the right-hand side. Just go to that and type in crypto conspiracy. It'll bring them all up and look for Kent Lewis near the end. So it'll be probably 26, 27, 28, somewhere along that line. He goes through a lot of this with the Fed now and what the international standard will be when we are switched over to the central bank digital currency. So probably overtalked it, but great question. You have another one?
Oh, yes. They're coming in pretty hot. what is your outlook on Barrick gold?
I'm not a fan of Barrick for a lot of reasons. I quit owning it when George Herbert Walker Bush was on the board of directors, and that's been a long time ago. A lot of conservatives like it. I don't. Again, there's a situation that I know personally that's somewhat of a rumor, and I'm not much of a rumor person, as anyone that knows me would verify. But there is some concern over the Pascua-Lama project on who actually is the owner on it. And I've been investigating that for a lot of years and mentioned it to our premium service people. I think there are better places to be than Barrick, but if you like it, I'm free market, you know, take it on. That's not one I've owned for a long time and I don't plan it.
Another question is, how will the banking crisis affect miners and mining projects?
Good question. It's going to affect everything. So the miners are not exempt, but the usual run to gold takes place during the banking crisis, which means anything gold related or silver related will go up, not down. So what it means for the price of the stocks or the price of gold and silver, we can be assured that the most likely is for everything to go up. However, what would it do as far as the actual physical mining? That's to be determined. If it's in a real crisis, and we're looks like we'll are entering one, capital becomes very scarce. So there's the you have to if you have a lot of credit and you're a mining concern, that credit could be cut off, and if you need that credit to do operations, you're out of operating in the mine. That's not that likely in your bigger companies. That wouldn't be a concern of mine. And maybe a mid-tier or whatever, depending on how it's structured. So you really want to look at the financials. And if you don't know how to, you want to find someone such as myself or others is running out there in my field that would be able to mitigate the risk. But as far as making money before, let's say, how do I say it? People that were more in tune with reality were able to determine that this mining concern may have to shut down a couple of their mines because of what their credit situation is, this price of that stock would probably still go higher because a lot of people are really not that sophisticated. They see that gold's moving up. They don't want to buy gold coins. They've got an E-Trade account or Ameritrade. I don't favor any of them. They're all very similar, actually, because they're competitive. But you're in your Scottrade account, you buy Barrick or you buy Newmont. Or you buy a junior or whatever, anything with gold. And that would be without any research at all. It's totally emotional. It's like, I don't have gold. I need gold. What gold stocks do I know? None. Type in gold stocks, top gold stocks into a search engine. You get a bunch of names. You go to your account and buy. So I think I covered that. But, you know, I think the more important point I'm making is that, yeah, if you really want to look at the longer term, you really have to determine what the risk exposure is company by company and make sure. Going back just to over talk it a bit, in the 30s, of course, gold was outlawed for U.S. citizens, but homestake mining went up substantially and was paying huge dividends. So did dome mines. So are we going into a 30s type of a depression? I don't know. But if you pick the strong companies, they will do well in my view.
Do you have more trust in credit unions than banks because certain credit unions have nothing to do with derivatives?
I do. If you have the ability to get in a credit union, I would. I think that's a smart move. I've said that to both publicly and privately. Doesn't exempt you from a banking crisis, but it could mitigate it quite a bit.
Of the precious metals, which do you feel trump gold as an investment in today's current commodity environment?
I'm very favorable to platinum. I just did a huge report a month ago on platinum. Although it's not used as money or considered money, classically it is, but let's not go down that road. It's very scarce and 70% comes from South Africa. And it is needed in the high-tech society. Your chips that are made out of Taiwan use both gold, silver, and platinum. And the tech society isn't going away. So I have been lucky or fortunate to buy both the leveraged and non-leveraged position around the 850 level. I think it's a little safer than gold. Is very safe. I think it's got more juice to it than gold does, because when the move or the run to gold starts, and a dealer, let's say, is out of gold coins, for an example, and there's platinum sitting there, then that person's going to buy platinum. That may sound a bit corny, but all the precious metals will benefit. I'm not very high on palladium. Just for full disclosure, I've got a spread on that's been working out really well for months, and that's a long platinum, short palladium. And if you check the chart on that spread, you'll see it's still working in my favor. But, you know, if you're not into the platinum thing, which is mainly for people that are pretty savvy in precious metals, this is not a beginner situation. I just go with gold and silver. If you're high net worth, you know, determine a ratio you're comfortable with, maybe half and half, half of your, you know, proportion to the metals, which I advocate 10% in today's environment, I'd say 20%. So if you have $100,000 in liquid assets, not counting any real estate, not counting what you could, you know, wholesale your cars for, that would be 20,000, maybe 25,000. And that could be, depending on your age and your risk tolerance, half in gold, half in silver. That's what I would do personally.
Okay, then. Thank you, David. That does conclude the time for our session. We weren't able to get to everyone's questions, and I apologize for that. Perhaps you could send your questions to David at, what is it, the support at thedavidmorganreport.com?
It's support at themorganreport.com.
The Morgan Report, sorry. I did type that in the chat box earlier on if you need to scroll up to get that. And I do want to thank you, David, for such a great presentation, and thank you all for joining us today.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.